discourse on the twofold thought, Dvaita Vitakka Sutta. Thus have I heard, at one time the Lord was staying near Savatthi in the Jetakru in Anathapindika's monastery. While he was there, the Lord addressed the monks, saying, "Monks," these monks answered the Lord, "One Lord in ascent." The Lord spoke thus, "Monks, before my awakening, while I was the Bodhisattva, not fully awakened, this occurred to me. Suppose that I should fare along with twofold thought. So, monks, whatever is thought of sense pleasures, and whatever is thought of malevolence, and whatever is thought of harming, that I made into one part. And whatever is the thought of renunciation, whatever is the thought of non-malevolence, and whatever is the thought of non-harming, that I made into the other part. While I, monks, was faring on thus, diligent, ardent, self-resolute, thought of sense pleasures arose, and I comprehended thus, this thought of sense pleasures has arisen in me, but it conduces to self-hurt, and it conduces to hurt of others, and it conduces to the hurt of both. It is destruction of intuitive wisdom, associated with distress, not conducive to Nibbana. But while I was reflecting, it conduced to self-hurt, it subsided. And while I was reflecting, it conduced to the hurt of others, it subsided. And while I was reflecting, it is destructive of intuitive wisdom, it is associated with distress, it is not conducive to Nibbana, it subsided. So I kept on getting rid of the thought of sensual pleasures as it constantly arose. I kept on driving it out, I kept on making an end of it." So here we talk about the thought of sense pleasures, that is kama vitakka, and the vyapada vitakka, and vihinsa vitakka. So now, how does Buddha, Bodhisattva, because he has not enlightened, how does he know that this thought of sense pleasures that has arisen conduces to self-hurt and hurt of others? See, we sort of know that one because Buddha told us. But Bodhisattva also knew that one, right? But I mean, we can only guess over here. Now, we can see that because of the sense pleasures, people do certain bad things, even now and before Buddha and all the time. For example, that some people steal cars. Even the children do that one. And what they want to do, they want to drive fast or something, and they steal cars. And so things are connected with the sensual desire, sense pleasures. And so that since they have those thought of sense pleasures, so this stealing is that harmful to the owner. Owner of the car, that if you own the car, if your car is stolen, that you can see that it's harmful to the other person. So the sense pleasures led to this situation, and in stealing lead to greed as well. And because of one is greedy, one would do such a thing. And also the ill will, because of the ill will, one would do killing. And so it is harmful. So that we can see that how it is harmful to others. And then if you apply something that one would do to others and it's happening to you yourself, then one can see that it is harmful to me as well. If I steal somebody else's property, then it is harmful to that person. And if the same thing happened to me, it is harmful to me. So probably the practical aspect can be used over here. So, and remember, Buddha, Bodhisattva always wanted to attain Nibbana. That's his aspiration. So, since it is his aspiration, that if it is destructive of intuitive wisdom, and he doesn't want to do that one because the wisdom is his goal. And associated with distress, and not conducive to Nibbana. Whenever he actually reflected that on, it was good enough that to go along, subside. Even for any meditator who is following this path, then that's this this thought is good enough to reflect upon that I got this particular sensuous desire, and this is meditation time, you can apply this one. It's a really good medicine. If you think that it is conducive to hurt of others and conducive to hurt of both, and conducive to self and conducive to the hurt of others, and it conducive to hurt of both, and is destructive to your wisdom, that if your aim is also to develop wisdom, and so then it will subside. So similarly, the cruelty, the thought of harming, that cruelty lead to delusion. So those are the things Buddha was using. While I'm also sparing on thus diligent, ardent, self-resolved, thought of malevolence arose, thought of harming arose, and I comprehended thus this thought of malevolence and thought of harming has arisen in me, but it conduces to self-hurt, not conduces to nibbana. But while I was reflecting, it conduces to self-hurt, and so on. It is not conducive to nibbana, it subsided. So I kept on getting rid of the thought of harming as it constantly arose. I kept on driving it out, kept on making an end of it. So in the meditation time, when these things are coming up, that sensual desire, maybe that you're thinking about, you know, earning money and, you know, I do this household, this thing, that thing, gardening, all parcel part of that package. And so basically the mundane thing one would do, kept on driving it out. Monks, according to whatever a monk ponders and reflect on much, his mind in consequence gets a bias that way. So it's a really good statement over there. If we keep on pondering on something, our mind gets biased. If a monk ponders and reflect much on thought of sense pleasures, he ejects thought of renunciation. If he makes much of thought of sense pleasures, his mind inclines to the thought of sense pleasures. So we think about sense pleasures, it keep on growing, never stopping. And it keep on ejecting the thought of renunciation. Monks, if a monk ponders and reflect much on thought of malevolence, or thought of harming, he ejects the thought of non-harming. If he makes much of thought of harming, his mind inclined to the thought of harming. So that's why people, you know, that they get get ill will, for example, and then somebody is passing and I don't like that person, and thinking about that person, it naturally coming up and keep on, that person has gone past and that one, but this person is burning with anger and, you know, blaming, and all those things are happening because our mind just inclined to that thing, that state, and it keeps on growing in that direction. It's funny thing that we do to ourselves, you know, without knowing this, we kept on doing these things. Monks, if it is as if in the last month of rains in the autumn, where the corn is thick, a cowherd might be looking after the cows and might hit them above and below with a stick and might restrain and check them. What is the reason for this? Monks, that cowherd sees death or imprisonment or degradation from the at source. So if we let the cows go and eat other people's corn, you know, that you can go to jail. And even so did I, monk, see the peril in unskilled state of mind, the vanity, the defilement, and the advantage allied to cleansing and renouncing them for skilled state of mind. So has seen the danger that, the sense pleasures, when one get these sense pleasures, Buddha said in another discourse, it's like we should see the sense pleasures as a charcoal pit, burning charcoal pit. And this is the Dukkadhamma Sutta. And how bhikkhu are the sense pleasures seen by a bhikkhu? That is the view, ditti. In such a way that as he looks at them, sensual desire, sensual affection, sensual infatuation, sensual passion do not lie latent within him regard to sensual pleasures. Suppose there is a charcoal pit, deeper than a man's height, filled with glowing coals without flame or smoke. A man would come alone, wanting to live, not wanting to die, desiring happiness and averse to suffering, then two strong men would grab him by both arms and drag him towards the charcoal pit. The man would wriggle his body this way and that. For what reason? Because he knows, I will fall into this charcoal pit and I will thereby meet death or deadly suffering. So too, bhikkhu, when a bhikkhu has seen sensual pleasures as similar to a charcoal pit, sensual desire, sensual affection, sensual infatuation, sensual passion, do not lie latent within him in regard to sensual pleasures. One has to see it as a charcoal pit. That's a very important thing.
So, we are going another era, isn't it? We are trying to go into that.
Charcoal pit, yeah. So, while Aimans was faring on diligent, ardent self-resolve, thought of renunciation arose, and I comprehended thus, this thought of renunciation has arisen in me, and it conduces neither to self-hurt, nor does it conduce to the hurt of others, nor does it conduce to the hurt of both. It is for growth in individual wisdom. It is not associated with distress. It is conducive to Nibbana. If during the night, monks, I should ponder and reflect upon this, not from that source do I behold fear. And if during the day, monks, I should ponder and reflect upon this, not from that source do I behold fear. And if during the night and day, monks, I should ponder and reflect upon this, not from that source do I behold fear. But I thought that after pondering and reflecting too long, my body would be weary. If the body was weary, the mind would be disturbed. If the mind is disturbed, it is a mind far from concentration. So I, monk, subjectively steadied the mind. I calmed it. I made it one-pointed. I concentrated. What was the reason for this? I thought, do not let my mind be disturbed. So he was very finely controlling it, so that when one do the meditation for a long time, it is not harming to the sense pleasures, are harming to self, harming to others, harming to both. The thought of renunciation, opposite of that one, is not harming anyone. And no fear arises. See, the fear and the suffering are very closely related. In Petapopadesa, for example, says, there is no fear than compared to the suffering. Dukkha. Dukkha is the biggest fear. You see that if I possess something, and if I lose that one, right? So then I get the suffering nature, you know, I'm sad, as all those things are coming up with it, painful nature. And because of that one, I have the fear, very strong fear. For example, if I'm going to lose my leg, right? So there is this suffering associated with that one. So there's fear. So whatever the things that we are possessing will lead to this condition. And the fear has to be always compared to suffering. Suffering is the biggest one. Nothing comparable to this thing.
It's because of the desire to existence, isn't it?
Desire to existence, desire for the sense pleasures and all those things. Kama tanha, all those things count. And then the Buddha could keep on doing that one. So there aren't any bad thoughts, but body get sort of tired. Even if you have the rapture for a long, long, long time, because of the rapture flowing through, then you get tired as well because of that. So Buddha managed to control it in proper way. While Aimans was faring on diligent, ardent self-resolve, thought of non-malevolence, thought of non-harming arose, and I comprehended thus, this thought of non-malevolence, of non-harming, has arisen in me, and it conduces neither to self-hurt, nor does it conduce to the hurt of others, nor does it conduce to the hurt of both. It is for growth in intuitive wisdom. It is not associated with distress. It is conducive to Nibbana. If during the night, and if Bodhisattva was doing that one, not from that source do I behold fear. But I thought that after pondering and reflecting too long, my body would be weary. If the body was weary, the mind would be disturbed. If the mind is disturbed, it is a mind far from concentration. So I, monk, subjectively steadied the mind. I calmed it. I made it one-pointed. I concentrated. What was the reason for this? I thought, do not let my mind be disturbed. Monks, according to whatever monks ponders and reflects on much, his mind in consequence gets biased that way. Monks, if a monk ponders ponder and reflect much on thought of renunciation, he ejects thought of sense pleasures. If he makes much of thought of renunciation, his mind inclined to the thought of renunciation. So we keep on doing that on, we keep on going in that way, because the consciousness established regarding that on, that particular meditation, renunciation. Monks, if a monk ponder and reflect much on the thought of non-malevolence or non-harming, he ejects thought of harm. If he makes much of thought of non-harming, his mind inclined to thought of non-harming. Monks, it is as if the last month of the hot weather, when all the corn is stored at the confines of a village, a cowherd might be looking after the cows. While he is at the root of a tree or in the open, he remembers there is something to be done and thinks those are the cows. Even so, monks, remembering there is something to be done, did I think those are the mental states? So the thought of renunciation, all those things, those are the mental states. So he was not letting that, he was very mindful that not letting those things coming in, because sense pleasures can come up any time, the ill will and all those things. And was mindful about those states. Monks, unsluggish energy was stirred up in me. Unmuddled mindfulness was set up. The body was tranquil, impassible. The mind composed, one-pointed. Then I monk, aloof from the pleasures of the senses, aloof from one's state of mind, enters on and abided in the first jhana, rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. That is this virya effort Buddha established. That Bodhisattva's effort was really great, in the sense that when the Bodhisattva was sitting down on that night, that he sat down, that I will not get up from this place until I get the enlightenment. That is the biggest one can actually have, the strongest effort. I mean, imagine one would sit down like that one. I won't get up without becoming enlightened. And this is the Aradha Virya. This energy was stirred up. Unmuddled mindfulness was set up. The body was tranquil. So becoming tranquil and attaining the first jhana concentration. And we will look at this on little bit detail, this first jhana, that so how one would get into this first meditation here. For fulfilling of non-greed, he thinks renunciation thinking. Here for the fulfilling non-hate, he thinks non-illusion thinking. Herein for the fulfilling of non-delusion, he thinks non-cruelty thinking. So what the person wants is the non-greed, non-hate and non-delusion. For that purpose, to make it happen, think about the renunciation thinking, and then the non-hate, non-ill will, and the non-cruelty. So what is thinking here? Thinking is vitakka. Vitakka, sometimes translated as initial application. Vitakka. There are three kinds of thinking, namely renunciation thinking. Now, remember that in the text over here, that aloof from the pleasures of the senses, aloof from unskilled state of the mind, entered and abided in the first jhana, rapture and pleasure born, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. That's what we are talking about, direct thought. The direct thought is this thinking. So those are the three thinking. And vichara, here thinking is the first instance, while the exploring is the exploration of what is got thus. So thinking, it's like that. A bee come to the flower, that is this thinking or coming over there. The guy rooting around the flower is the exploring. And there's another example over here. Just as when a man sees a man coming in distance, he does not yet know whether it is a woman or a man. But when he has got the perception that it is a woman, or that it is a man, or that it is one such color, caste, or that it is one such shape, figure, Then when he is thinking, he further scrutinizes as follows. How then? Is he virtuous or unvirtuous? Rich or poor? Right? Such is exploring. So person is coming far away, we do not know. So there is attention to that one. Is that a woman or a man? So while he is approaching and then we decided that he is a man or a woman, then what we are actually thinking is whether this person is a rich person, a poor person, and a virtuous person. That one, you see, that this is normally happening in the mind as well, regarding a person. Is a good one or a bad one? And so the exploring part is that, vitak-vichara. In thinking, he fixes. So he fixes the mind to the person who is coming over there. And the exploring, he wonders about that his fixed object and turns it over. And again, another example is as just as a winged bird first accumulates the speed and afterward no more accumulates the speed when gliding, so too thinking is like an accumulation of speed. And like the outstretchedness of the gliding bird's wings is exploring. So it's moving those things and just explore. You know, the birds do that on hawks, sort of look at it, exploring. Keeps preserving, exploring, which keeps preserving the thinking and keeps preserving the exploring. So whatever things that when we are thinking about, you know, the birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering. So you first, well, I will contemplate about the first noble truth. That was the thinking. And you got that first one, for example, that birth is suffering. So now fix the mind to the birth is suffering and exploring it. How is birth suffering? You know, the birth in the hell is suffering. Animal realm is suffering. You know, that keep on doing that one in that one. So that is the initial application and sustained application of thinking and exploring. Now, it says, such thinking is the opposite of perception of sensual pleasures. This kind of thinking is the, because this is the renunciation thinking, is the opposite of perception of sensual pleasures. Such exploring is the opposite of perception of ill will and perception of cruelty. When you keep on examining that one, it is the opposite of the ill will and the perception of cruelty. So the thinking and exploring get rid of the all three. You know, the sensual desire, sensual thinking, and then the ill will thinking and the cruelty thinking. The action of such kind of thinking is non-attraction to the unprofitable. So unprofitable is the greed state, greed, lobha dosa moha, greed and the hatred and the delusion. So there is no attention to those states. The action of such kind of exploring is the restraining of the forerunners, not letting those things coming and play its part. So there are many examples given like that on this. Another one is thinking is like a text reciter who does his recital silently, reading a book. Exploring is like he's simply contemplating it. You contemplate what is the inside this text, what it is talking about. No, when you say birth is suffering, it's just a word, birth is suffering, it, maybe reciting is just birth is suffering. You know, even a parrot can do that, right? So now over here, having done that, then you examine it thoroughly. Is it so? So by doing that one, having these thoughts alone, will take one into a jhana state, because that our mind, as Buddha said, if you actually contemplate and, you know, they let the mind go in that direction, it keep on going in that direction. That's how our mind is. If one ponders and reflect much on the mind, in consequence gets biased that way. So mind gets biased that way and it is there. Yeah. With the stilling of direct thought and evaluation, so so in the first meditation you can see there are five things first got rid of. We got rid of sensual desire and the ill will and sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry and doubt. Those five hindrances, pancha nivarana, are suppressed. And he gained five things. So the five things that he is gaining is that the rapture, the first we have the initial application and sustained application with akka vichara. And then there is this initial the rapture born out of that one. And there is pleasure, so two things. And then the one-pointedness. So five things gone, five things gained. With the stilling of direct thought and evaluation, so now I don't need the initial application and sustained application. I entered and remain in the second jhana. Rapture and pleasure born of composure. Unification of awareness, free from direct thought and evaluation, internal assurance. So, over here, that because one has done this form for a long, long time, it just don't have to reapply it again and again. So, it can maintain the rapture and pleasure in that condition. With the fading of rapture, I remain in equanimity, mindful and alert and physically sensitive of pleasure. I entered and remain in the third jhana, of which Noble One declare, equanimous and mindful, he has pleasurable abiding. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, as with early appearance of elation and distress, I entered and remain in the fourth jhana, purity of equanimity and mindfulness, neither pleasure nor pain. So, the second jhana level, there is this rapture. The rapture is flowing through the body. And it makes the body tired as well after a long time. And so one would want to get rid of this rapture. Rapture sort of let it fade away. And then he is living with the third jhana concentration. There is this pleasure. The rapture ceases, but the pleasure is there. So happy. And then, you see, the problem with that third jhana is that when the pleasure ceases, what you get is the pain. When the pain ceases, we get the pleasure. When the pleasure ceases, we get the pain. So the third jhana is not stable because it's changed from one to another. So that person doesn't want to have this change either. So then one would be indifferent to the pleasure that has arisen. So it's not grabbing that pleasure. So then attain the fourth jhana, leaving out this the pain and the pleasure both. When the mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed to knowledge of recollecting my past lives. So, in the fourth jhana level, Buddha directed to recollecting the past births. Pubbenivana smuti jnana. I really recollected my manifold past lives. One birth, two, five, 10, 50, 100,000, 100,000, many eons of cosmic contraction, many eons of cosmic expansion, many eons of cosmic contraction and expansion. There I had such name, belonged to such a clan, and had such an appearance. Such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such the end of life passing away from that state. I re-arose here. There too I had such name, belonged to such clan, had such an appearance, such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such the end of my life, passing away from that state, I re-arose here. Thus I remembered my manifold past lives, in their modes of detail. So this is that one, when one reads this fourth jhana concentration, you sort of try to recollect what I have been doing in the past, in my past.
How do you do that?
Hmm?
How do you do that?
Going to the concentration, having reached the concentration, when I did it, I actually went to the seventh one and came back somehow to the fourth one. So then I was just thinking what I was doing in my past birth. Sanskara.
You have to concentrate on that?
No, having concentrated, having attained that state, because this you know that you are in a very high state.
So how do you know that you are in a very high state? Like just because of the feelings that you get to your body?
You
feel the energy, I think.
Well, it is that this is gradual. See, the first jhana level, anyone can know that I am in the first jhana because of the rapture. It's like a water flowing in the body, starting from here and it's flow everywhere. Right? So then you know that I am in first jhana.
You see that your sort of emptiness kind of...
No. Emptiness is seventh jhana. First jhana, you feel rapture because the rapture is present. So how can it be empty? Because as soon as you feel the rapture, that you are not empty. And in the second jhana, you don't have much effort that you are putting over there. It's just there. And then the third one, the rapture has ceased, but the pleasure remains. It's like that you go to a beach or something. And then it's a very light breeze coming up. And then you can see if you close your eyes that the eyelid is touching. Likewise, you have the sort of a pleasure. I mean, this is the minimum thing I can describe it. With the fourth jhana level, that you feel like this, your head, skull is sort of open. that you don't have any tensions in this area, that you can see something like open. You don't care at that state.
Mm.
For example, if something is happening around you, mm-hmm. you don't pay attention to that, sort of thing. And going beyond that one, you go into the space is infinite and the consciousness is infinite, and going into that level, and then you go into the plane of nothing. There is no thing.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, there is this subtle perception only, very fine perception. Because at that time, how you reach over there, but what you have done to arrive at that one is that what I did was to, there are a number of methods. One method is that you actually eliminate all the elements. For example, that if you regard the element of extension, for example, patavi dhatu, and over here there is patavi. There is patavi outside. And then you see that the excrement outside is not mine, not me. Similarly, that this hardness over here is also made of same thing. If that one is the same as this one, if that one is not mine, this one is not mine. So you sort of have an inference, having look at that, it's not mine. The grasses outside is patavi. This is also patavi. So you clean your mind, cleanses your mind completely from patavi. No element of extension whatsoever you are paying attention to. And then the element of heat, element of cohesion, element of motion, all those things, then what is left is the space is infinite level. And then again you use this one, that this is not mine. I mean, outside there is plenty of space. It's not mine. So similarly, inside my nose there is a space. Inside my mouth there is a space. It's not mine. Right? If it is mine, that even the mosquitoes or small things even can't go in, even the food can't go in. It's not mine. So you need to get that perception right. So since you are eliminating all these things from your mind, you left with nothing. That is the plane of nothing. Because there were six elements. I got rid of the six and I'm left with nothing. So basically you are removing everything regarding the five aggregates of clinging. Then whether it is a matter, whether it's a feeling or it's a perception, you will completely try to get rid of those things. So having reached, I mean, you don't have to go into that level to do this one. First, simply you need to maintain the fourth jhana concentration somehow. Fourth level of concentration has to be maintained. Even you can do it in a lower things as well, but you be sort of stable to do that one. So, and then you think, you just try to recollect what was my sanskara, my volitional formation, what I was doing in the past birth. And then as soon as I did that one, I saw that I'm doing this. You know, the thoughts and everything comes up. It's that there is this scene by you, that your actions. You see, at that time, I do not see myself. What I see is my hand, and that the saw that I'm cutting the wood, right? I have been a carpenter in the past birth. So I can see that one. I can see the hand going up, down. So that's what you see. You don't see your body. So then if you get the greediness or something that I need to see my body or something like that one, then that means you are fallen from that meditation. So you just recollect, and then as soon as I did that one, then I was thinking about what I was doing, what was the meditation I was doing. Then I could even see stones on the ground, that I was in the light, perception of light meditation. That thing. So it can be done.
Is this because of the vijnana is still,
yes, it's
within you, that you have done in very past days?
Well, I mean, it's something to do with the neural network actually.
Mm-hmm.
If you know about neural networks, you can see how it is working. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of feeding something for neural network, for our brain, if you see. If you feed something from this end, some sort of a thing, then the other one coming out of the other end. So if I feed the volitional formation, what was the volitional formation, then I can see the what is coming out at that time. So this is a consciousness that is actually, the volitional formation construct that consciousness for you at that time. Now, when I was trying to recall my name, right, so how do you recall your name? either somebody should call you at that time, so then you know your name, otherwise you don't know your name. You see, your father or mother or something. So I was actually looking at the birth certificate. The instance of the birth certificate that I was reading, at that time I could get the name. It was very hard for me to get my name. Although we know our name is this and such now, to get it, you need to have an input. What is the input? An instance, you are actually looking at a paper, or somebody should be calling your name. So those were the methods. So then Buddha could recall, the Buddha could go home, you know, many yawns and contractions, you know, Buddha's concentration is, Bodhisattva's concentration was such great. This was the first knowledge I attained in the first watch of the night. Ignorance was destroyed. Knowledge arose. Darkness was destroyed. Light arose, as happens in one who is heedful, ardent and resolute. This alone is really great statement over there. You see, as soon as you actually see who you were before, you see, this is the Prince Siddhartha, right, at that time. So, having been born as a prince, there would have been some sort of a conceit that I am the prince, right, the son of that one. When I was recalled that, you know, I was a carpenter, right, because of the concentration at that time, it's fine. But after getting out of the meditation and having eaten, then you can, it's little by little come into your mind, because I had a perception, maybe I have been a scientist before, right, that sort of thing. So how about the Buddha? When he recalled many eons and eons of contraction and expansions, that he see that he was an animal, right? An ant. You know, going from this ant and divine being, the Brahma, the Sakriti, you know, the Sakriti Raja, you know, the world ruling monarch and all those things, and you can see these fluctuations going from this end to that. So then what is this? That's the thought that's coming up. How much suffering I had. And you recall your suffering, all the suffering that you had in these things. You know, if you when you are recollecting fast birth, you need to see what is the aging, sickness, death. That's the most important thing. It's not like that I didn't get this idea first, but I was helped later on. That you need to recall what is the aging, sickness, death. Birth, aging, sickness, death. Four Noble Truths, the first part of the Four Noble Truths, that's what you should be recalling. And then you see how much suffering, you know, I could see my hand, you know, in the last birth, you know, these veins coming out over here. When you actually see it, the feeling that I had, I never had that one in my, this birth. I could recall that feeling that I had. So, think about the Bodhisattva, that going far, that far into the, you know, the ant, an animal, cutting the, I can't go for that far, you know, the being a cow, how many times, and all those things. So, I saw by means of divine eye, when the mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to the knowledge of the passing away and reappearance of beings, that is the Chutupapata Nama. I saw by means of divine eye, purified and surpassing the humans, being passing away and reappearing, and I discern how they are inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, in accordance with their karma. These beings, who were endowed with bad conduct of body, speech and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong views and undertook actions under the influence of wrong views with the breakup of the body after death, have reappeared in the plane of deprivation, the bad destination, the lower realms, in hell. But these beings who were endowed with the good conduct of body, speech and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right views and undertook actions under the influence of right views, with the breakup of the body after death, have reappeared in the good destinations, in the heavenly world. Thus, by means of divine eye, purified and surpassing the humans, I saw beings passing away and reappearing, and I discerned how they are inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, in accordance with their karma. So, to get that knowledge, there's a discourse in the Anguttara Nikaya Chapalavagga, where Buddha is explaining how he got that knowledge. It is this the perception of light that leads to dibbacakku. Perceiving the light, you see the light and you grasp the sign very well. And then you maintain that thing in the day and in the after. And you apply these meditations like this, the contemplation about the 32 parts of the body, the above and below, the before and after, and all those techniques. Having done those things, that is explained in Iddipada Samyutta, having done those things, and then that discourses Buddha, Bodhisattva could see light first, but couldn't see forms. And then he developed concentration further, then he could see the forms and light both. And then when he see the forms, then he could not see whether, so he was actually seeing the divine beings and so on. So whether Buddha was, the Bodhisattva was well, what are the karma they have done and how much lifespan they have, and whether the Bodhisattva has been born in those realms or not. So all those things Buddha recollected. There were 8 stages over there. And then finally you could see all of them. You can see and analyze the karma for them. So so that's the part about the Chatupadana. This was the second knowledge I attained in the second watch of the night. Ignorance was destroyed, knowledge arose, darkness was destroyed, light arose, as happens in one who is heedful, ardent and resolute. With the mind thus was concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, pliant, malleable, steady and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to the knowledge of the ending of the mental formations. Asavakkhyayana. I discern as it was actually present that this is stress. This is the origination of stress. This is the cessation of stress. This is the way leading to the cessation of stress. These are the fermentations. This is the origination of fermentations. This is the cessation of fermentation. This is the way leading to cessation of fermentations. My heart, thus knowing, thus seeing, was released from the fermentation of sensuality, released from the fermentation of becoming, released from the fermentation of ignorance. With the release, there was the knowledge released. I discerned that birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for this world. This monk was the third knowledge attained by me in the last watch of the night. Ignorance was dispelled, knowledge arose, darkness was dispelled, light arose, even as I abide a diligent, ardent, self-resolved. So here you can see that in the second watch, first in the first one, Buddha saw that all the recollection of his past, you know, life, what was, how he was, and then he could see the karma by killing lead to this one, you know, stealing lead to that one. So all those things. So then the eightfold path, you know, then he completed the eightfold path and the whole knowledge about the eightfold path. And by the time of understanding, in the Chakkapavattana Sutta, for example, Buddha says that, you know, he understood in these three modes that this has to be developed. I have developed it likewise. Yeah.
So did he do it at a stretch? On that particular day or before that also?
Well, for example, light meditation, perception of light, he developed for many times, right? So, in that night, he got all these three knowledges. It was very quick for him. Normally, you need to go for long time, but it's like, you know, the whole thing is something that develops so much, all aligned at that time, gets everything. Certain arahants, for example, they don't have any psychic powers. As soon as they become arahant, they get all psychic powers with the destruction of the other ones. Certain arahants. Because that it was there, this particular thing was holding them back. And when that one is gone, everything is appearing.
What is fermentation?
It's the evolution of formations. Yeah. Sorry. Asrava. Yeah. Sometimes it's using as the sanskara. Yeah. In this case, asrava. Monks, as there might be large piece of low-lying marsh grounds in a forest grove, near which might leave a large herd of deer towards which some man might come alone, not desiring their good, not desiring their well, not desiring their security from bonds. If there were road that was secure, safe, leading to rapture, he might block that road, might open up a treacherous road, might place a decoy and might tether a male female decoy as a lure. Even so, months after time, that great herd of deer might come to calamity and dwindle away. So they put this the deer, you know, the constructed deer in that road. He closed the good path and created the bad path. So when they go in, they can't come back, because they are going to die. Hmm? But monks, if a man come alone towards that great herd of deer, desiring their good, desiring their well, desiring their security from bonds, and if there were a road that was secure, safe, leading to rapture, he might open up that road. He might block the treacherous road. He would disturb the male decoy. He would let loose the female lure. Thus, months after time, that great herd of deer would come to growth, expansion, maturity. Monks, this parable was made by me for illustrating the meaning, and this is the meaning here. The large piece of low-lying marshy ground, monks, this is a synonym for sense pleasures. The great herd of deer, monks, this is a synonym for beings. The man not desiring their good, not desiring their will, not desiring their security from bonds, monks, this is a synonym for Mara, evil one. So evil one is the one that not desiring that he made the bad path. The treacherous way, monks, this is a synonym for the eightfold wrong way. That is to say, wrong view, wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong way of living, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, wrong concentration. The male decoy, monks, this is a synonym for the passion of delight, that's Nandiraga. Nandiraga is Dadamoha. The female, monks, this is a synonym for ignorance, avidya. The man desiring good, desiring wealth, desiring security from bonds, monk, this is a synonym for the Tathagata, perfect one, fully awakened one. By that way, by way, the way that it is secure, safe, leading to rapture, monk, this is a synonym for the Aryan Eightfold Way, that is to say, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right way of living, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. This is the, thus is the secure, safe way leading to rapture, opened by me, monks, the treacherous way blocked. The decoy disturbed, the lure let loose. Whatever monks is to be done from compassion by your teacher, seeing the welfare of his disciples, that has been done by me out of compassion for you. These monks are the roots of trees. These are the empty places. Meditate, monks. Do not be slothful. Be not remorseful later. This is our instruction to you. Thus spoke the Lord, delighted these monks, rejoicing what the Lord had said. So, Buddha opened the path, path to Nibbana. So this discourse, I have used this one many times, time to time. It's if you have this, you know, the thoughts, sensual thoughts, evil thoughts, or cruelty thoughts, and if you think the way that Buddha thought, that it is harmful to self, harmful to others, harmful to both, and destructive of intuitive wisdom. That's the word actually hitting me as well. If it is going to destruct my wisdom, I don't want that to happen. As soon as I remember that, recall that to mind, it goes away. And you can balance your mind very well with this discourse. It has such a power. It's just that thinking and maintaining it. It allows you to maintain this thought. Because now, first what Buddha was doing is, is filtering out, this is sensual thoughts, this is renunciation thoughts. So there are two buckets here. You know, the first you observe that these are coming up. If you do not observe, you do not see this, that these things are coming up in my mind. Okay, having got to the two buckets, you know, the two lots, then whenever sensual desire comes up, well, it is harming me, harming both. And whenever you think that one, it goes away. So the renunciation one comes up. It is in the meditation time, you got to develop this skill at that time, so that you can go into rapture and happiness. This is Sammasankappa. Complete Sammasankappa and the Michchasankappa and Sammasankappa. So get rid of the Michchasankappa and get the Sammasankappa. So what Buddha is saying, having, so you can see how you can go up to over here, It's by the having the right thought, right view first. That is the Four Noble Truths you're contemplating about the birth is suffering, aging is suffering, and so on. That lead to this one. And what this discourse says, how do you maintain that right thought rather than going into the wrong thought? And if you maintain the right thought, it flows through. Right view and right thought, as soon as you maintain those two, I mean, you can't maintain any one of these if you don't have virtue. That the killing, stealing, all those things that, you know, the bad things are there. It's a precursor. You've got to have that one first. So as soon as these two comes in, then the rest continues. No stopping. Going into the right concentration. It's just, you need the effort to maintain this. If there is no effort, you can't. Because the right view, right effort, right mindfulness, it continues. So what you are actually continuing, you are continuously maintaining the right thought at that time. So just maintaining the right thought means that you are in the alobha dosa moha, that path. So that path continue. Keep on continuing on that path, you get the concentration. There's nowhere else it can lead other than this. So right thought is the most important after the right view.
And even for the five sets also, you need the right view, otherwise you wouldn't...
You don't do that.
You don't do that, no? Even though you say in the morning and afternoon, it doesn't work like that.
No, when you actually...
Right view,
yeah.
You do that.
When you take five precepts, always say, think that panatipata, you know, that I refrain from killing. And you think that I refrain from killing because that leads to anger, hatred. Therefore, I refrain from killing. And when you say, adinnadana viramani, I refrain from taking what is not given. If I take what is given, what is not given, then that leads to lobha, greed. So I have fallen into the method of non-greed, non-hate, and non-delusion. So go through all these things, the sensual desire, the kamism ichachara, if you have the sexual misconduct, that leads to the greed as well as the moha, the delusion. It is twofold. And if you have the lying, that leads to greed. Why you lie?
But it's vice versa.
Vice versa, yes.
Greed leads to kamasam vichachara as well as
most of
the yes, the other way works as well. So if you kill, right, you get the hate. Killing leads to hate.
Oh, hate leads.
You, when you kill, you are angry.
No.
When you are after killing something, you are angry about that. If you steal, all those things you can see, the consequences immediately you can see. Person who has killed someone, he's angry. He was angry, he killed. Having killed, he's angry. So just a one loop, one bad loop, very bad loop. That's why they go to hell.
On the other hand, you hurt somebody else by doing everything.
Yes.
All the fighting.
Yes, yes.
You hurt somebody else.
Yeah.
But like in this discourse.
It is. And when you are taking the precepts, it's very important if you actually think it this way, that I'm not going to lie because that lead to greed. Okay? And I'm not going to have rough talk because that lead to hatred. I don't want to have the hatred. I have fallen to the method of non-hate. Right? So I don't want the hate. Therefore, I'm going to refrain from harsh speech. So that's what Buddha said. Those are the states. Like that he was actually thinking, you know, that cowherd is now resting and he's thinking there are things to be done. You know, there are something to be done. He remembered. Those are the states. They are coming up. They are there. So this is a recursive thing. So if you take, when you are taking precepts, if you think that I'm doing this one for the sake of not having that hate, and then the frivolous talks, that talking about the kings and queens and all those things, you know, that making people laugh and all those things, they lead to ignorance, the moha, the delusion. So those precepts in the Eightfold Path, one has to maintain. If you want to continue in that path, one has to maintain somehow. So when you can maintain that one, if you have the right view and then the right thought maintained in this way, and if you have those precepts, It automatically goes to right concentration. No stopping. No way to stop it.
Because you don't get involved in these things, isn't it?
Not involved in any of those sensual desire, ill thinking and all those things.
And I want to ask a question, nothing to do with this discussion though. Is it all right to ask?
Yeah.
When the Lord Buddha get enlightened when he did the first Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, it was heard by many different
worlds
Loka Dhatu. And so there are other loka like that, isn't it?
Yeah, divine worlds, yeah.
No, I mean in one, there is one, Sahasra Loka Dhatu.
Yeah, so that's actually explained in another discourse. You see, when this sun and moon, when it moves with the radiation, within that sphere of that radiation, there are thousands stars. Within that thousand stars, there are thousand earths, thousand Tautimsa, thousand, all the things in this world, there's a replication of the thousand times in those things.
Okay, this world and thousand other worlds.
Those are, yes.
Okay, in this world, and Lord Buddha could do this for the beings, to hear for the beings in this world and those other worlds.
He can do more than that.
More
so
than
this is just thousand we were talking about.
Yeah.
And then there is this middle tier that, let's say those thousand stars, right, and the thousand world system over here, that they spend light and, you know, moves and they spend light, right? So within that one, there are this another thousand into thousand, isn't it? 1 million stars in that one, right? And so the third one is that the those 1 million stars, how much the radiance of that, you know, the light spreading. So you can see the thousand into thousand, what, million into that one, maybe billion stars or something like that, right? Buddha can address that much worlds in one place.
Does that cover the whole thing?
What mean the whole thing?
There were any other worlds that could
of course,
be
of course.
Oh, okay.
Of course, beyond that one, there's quite a lot. This is infinite.
I mean, it's what are my question is, because there are the human beings in this world, and there are human beings in the other worlds too.
Yes.
And the human beings in any other world could hear this too. Is that right?
Well, it is a different thing. Not that thing. Not that Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Buddha, when the Buddha wants to send the message to the other ones, Buddha used some sort of a, let them have a perception from light or something.
Yeah.
And then they perceive that one. And then Buddha send the message through that
one.
That is going very far.
Okay. And there were beings that who were able to understand that.
Yes, there are beings who can understand that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then,
it is not, we are talking about, not talking about human beings. In our world system, this world is the, earth is the developed one.
The other human worlds weren't developed that far.
Not in that particular range I'm talking about. There can be other range, very far away. That very, very far away. Even the divine beings in the Akhanikta Brahma realm don't go that far.
Mm.
They can go for 10,000 fold system or something like that. But far away, other worlds, even there can be Buddhas. But not in the range of those Akhanikta Brahma realm divine beings.
This whatever the kalpa and all these things is said for this world system.
Well, kalpa can be there for any.
Yeah, I mean, what Buddhas that we get the next Buddha.
Right.
Defined to
into this world system. Yeah.
And is there sort of when somebody, you know, even the Lord Buddha's previous birth, has that happened in those worlds, the other worlds too?
There is one such incident. There are migration from those worlds as well. They are rare. And I don't know whether this is actually, whether Buddha said that one or is coming from commentary or not. One lady gave some food to the Buddha. Venerable Mahakashyapa was coming behind. So that lady gave the food to the Buddha, and then she saw Venerable Mahakashyapa coming, and she said that Putta, you know, Venerable Mahakashyapa is Putta, so she took back what gave to the Buddha and gave to Venerable Mahakashyapa, right? So then the Mahakashyapa's heart was sort of, you know, there is this thing that, you know, that because of this him that this happened. At that, the incident, only thing that actually says the commentary, or I think probably the commentary, says that, you see, by the time that Buddha comes into world, that he has given every one of us something, some donation, or food, or money, or something, because the paramita, the dana paramita. So, therefore, no one can actually take something, having given him or something like that. But this lady has not received anything from that one, because this lady was not from this world, was from some other world. That's the explanation.
And so Buddha
couldn't do anything. So, yeah, it's possible to visit those other worlds as well. Actually, I have visited one of them.
So you mean doing that is not good for her, because she would have done it?
Well, no. I mean, it is. She could have much merit than giving to Venerable Mahakashyapa.
Or she would have had compassion towards the other person. One is getting food, the other person is
not. No. Getting. What she said is, "That's my son. That's why she took the food back."
She felt that is her son is coming and hasn't got anything to give to the son or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Because that's a sort of attachment, isn't it?
Yeah.
That implies that Mahakashyapa is from someone, because if he was her son and she came from another world system, and why the link?
But the thing is that no, Venerable Mahakashyapa can be over here, but by the time he was here, when he was actually giving, he might have given to this lady. Mm-hmm. Sort of thing, but by the time Buddha was giving, somehow this part was missed or something, sort of thing. I mean, that's the explanation, and it's logical, but we do not know the truth. Yeah. So anyway, that's the world is that big.
If there is a Buddha, if there are Buddhas in other worlds at this
can
time,
be
if there are, if say if there are, so. People who do good things over here, I mean, do good things, mean not giving dana and all these things, so I aiming for Nibbana, why can't they go and...
Because it could be far away.
Cannot be born after death also?
No. The divine beings in the Akhanita Brahma realms are the most powerful in all those things. Mm. They are the ones who can actually go far. They are saying in their range there aren't any at this time that they can see, but they don't deny that there can be others far away.
If this distance matters, then does it mean that if we are born here, that we will be like we are here now and then we'll be born here again?
Stuck over here. Well, I mean, you can go into the other worlds, you know, the divine realms in these things. Hell, animal realm.
Matters,
it does matter.
Yeah.
It does matter.
Within this, the circle.
It is. Yeah. I have traveled to another planet. It's very far away, not alone. It's with the help of the divine beings in the Akhanita Brahma realm. That they said that even the four guardian gods can't go there. It's that far. So it's possible to go with the help of, them.
These ranges matter because, actually, there's an argument why Lord Buddha born in human world, rather than being born in
divine
other divine world. Because the reason is, if that happened, human being cannot approach.
And again, you can't see the
suffering.
Suffering that much, you know, and because
it's not easy. Mm. Yeah, to attain that level of that one, and also the you know what we can do if the Buddha was born in Chaturmasa, we can only jump up. That's all.
We probably don't hear.
All the others can come over here.
And again, it is because the definition of a Buddha also, it's because that's to serve for
all the world.
Yes, so many beings. So it's no use of a Buddha born in a place like
that. The reason is this is the lowest level that can, for example, the next level is the plane of departure, right?
Plane of departure is sort of. It's going down.
Down, right. In that, why Buddha will choose that one? Because there is no point, they cannot, they can understand this one.
Mm.
Right. And this is the lowest level.
Yakka can understand.
Yakka can understand. But Yakka, I don't know what is their plane. Is.
Well,
but anyway, this is the lowest level. The human being, this level is the lowest level that this Dhamma can be understood.
Yeah.
And because of that, that the place would choose, and so everybody else on top can come here and give this Dhamma. Mm.
And even though if they don't come here, they can hear it, isn't it?
They can hear it from the divine ear. They are normally coming here to hear it. Yeah, they choose that, you know, night time when other people are not, talking to Buddha or something. That's why Buddha is actually sort of reserved that time for them as well in that sense. Yeah, I think we will stop for today.